Ordinal, interval, and ratio. So these two comes under qualitative, these two comes under quantitative. In qualitative, you can put as a non-numerical without giving any coding, and you can put them in numerical also. But whereas here, in quantitative, only numerical. So we discussed the examples about nominal data also. Now you have seen your results. I think most of you passed the exam 311. So those who have, suppose some have failed, so there are two categories, pass and fail. Yes, what do you want?
Nothing. Other plan for a moment.
Yeah. So two possibilities, pass and fail. So this is nominal. Male and female. Not necessary to have only two categories. You can have more than two categories also nominal. The examples are race, blood group, just you are giving some sort of names, skin color. Of course here religion is only one religion in kingdom. Suppose if you look other countries like India, we have different religions, so we can give the names for that. So it's a nominal, just giving names, no numerical values attached to that. Whereas ordinal, you have some set of ordered categories you can classify. Take for example your marks, what you have seen. Instead of pass and fail, I can classify those who got A+, A, B plus, B, something like that. So you have some sort of ordered categories. So thus we have ordinal. Take income status, low income, middle income, high income, or education status, illiterate, high school, college, university, professional. So you can classify it. So this is what we call the nature of the data as qualitative, whereas in quantitative you have only numerical, that is two scales you have, interval scale and ratio scale. Interval scale is very limited. the limitation of that scale is you have a zero value arbitrary, it's not fixed. I have told you the only two examples in the literature what we have is IQ, where you have the negative markings, where zero is not fixed. And as well as the other example is
temperature.
So apart from these two examples, you can't measure any of the data on interval scale. Whereas ratio scale, you can measure
fixed
all the variables on ratio scale, where the data starts after zero, not less than zero. No negative values. If you take any of the characteristics, age, weight, height, it won't be negative and it won't be zero, only after zero. So zero is having some meaningful, I mean, point, whereas in interval, there is no meaning of a zero value. So this is what are the examples. I don't want to look back again because of lack of time. So this slide I think I did discuss. So this is another good example. What this example we're talking about is, this is a group frequency distribution table for number of patients are 14,604. The outcome variable is hospital length of stay for this blunt injured patients. What the information provided in this slide is, it's giving the mean length of stay 7.85. Don't bother about this. We're discussing the next session how to calculate the mean, standard deviation, standard error. So you know how to calculate the mean. You add up all these patients, I mean individual values, that is one patient is staying 4 days, 5 days. If you add up all these things, divide this number, you get this. So this information is indicating that the average length of stay of these patients is 7.85 days, around 8 days.
Uh-huh.
Whereas if you classify it as per these categories, you can see here, this is the percentage, that is 43.3% of the patients, they stayed only 1 to 3 days. And 25.6% of the patients, they stayed only 4 to 7 days. So if you add up these two categories, how much it is? Around 69%. 69% they stayed within 7 days, whereas your mean is indicating 7.85, which is misleading. Take for example, your class average says 65. It's not more, I mean, proper information. 60 is average. So the whole group reflect that, all of your average students. But that's not the case. Some of you are intelligent. Some of you are above average. Some of you are average. Very few are maybe poor. I don't know until I see my 304 course marks. So what can you do to give correct information? I can classify it, what you have already, you know, the grading system. A plus, B plus, so that we can know what percentage, I mean, of students are getting, I mean, in all the courses, I mean, A plus. So they are the brilliant. So that will be more informative than just taking one summary measure. That what the same information here. 68%, 69% they stayed within 7 days, whereas remaining they stayed within 2 weeks, 3 weeks. So instead of taking the mean, the quantitative, just you average taking the mean value, if you categorize what this data is, what type of data, hospital length of stay, quantitative or qualitative?
Quantitative.
Again, quantitative is a discrete or continuous?
Quantitative.
Discrete.
Because no 3.2, no 3.5 days, it is a whole number. Either 7 days or 21 days or 10 days or 5 days, it's a discrete. So quantitative data, you have two types. One is a discrete, the number of family members, the examples, number of boys, I mean, in each of the family. So whole number. Take the pulse rate or number of patients in any particular ward on a particular day, the whole number. There is no continuity. There is no fraction. So this also, it's a quantitative data, it's a discrete, but we can classify what this type of data?
Quantitative.
This is what type of data?
Qualitative.
Qualitative what again?
Continuous.
No.
So mix. Qualitative, what are the two types?
Ordinal.
Nominal, ordinal.
Ordinal.
So what this letter is?
Ordinal.
It's ordinal. Why confusion? Why you are confused? What are the broad classification I told you? Broad classification is qualitative, quantitative. In qualitative, you have nominal, ordinal.
What's nominal?
Nominal is just names. What are the examples? Gender,
race.
Blood group, skin color, race, religion. No numerical values attached to them. Whereas ordinal, you have some sort of ordered categories. Staging of the cancer, stage 1, stage 2, stage 3, stage 4, income status, low income, middle income, high income. This is nominal, ordinal. 1 to 3 days, 4 to 7 days, ordinal. Why confusion? So this is a more advantage by taking the data, your quantitative data, into qualitative, where you have the ordinal, I mean, different stages, and you can look, I mean, each category, what type of, I mean, what number of patients, I mean, how much percentage, I mean, it is. This is more informative. Okay? Some terminologies, I'm sorry for this slide, it's taken from the textbook. You have the outcome variable and exposure variable. Heard about these terminologies?
Yes.
What is exposure?
Exposures and the independent
factors. Any individual who got exposed to any of the environmental factors or his habits or any infection, I mean anything, what we call the exposure. Then that exposure leads to some
outcome.
That's the outcome, what we are looking for. Suppose smoking. Smoking leads to?
Lung cancer.
Cancer. So like this, I mean lack of exercise, obesity leads to?
Diabetes.
So you link, I mean, any of the exposures, I mean, to the outcome, the related outcome. This is what you can see, the examples, you can go through the exposure here and outcome. What we substitute this terminology, different variables. You can see here for the outcome variable, we call, I mean, response variable. In statistics, we call dependent variable. If you put the graphs, we take outcome variable always on y-axis. Okay, then we can say, I mean, we can use, I mean, most of these outcome variables, I mean, in the case control, I mean, group where we look, I mean, the outcome. Whereas exposure, we call explanatory variable, independent variable, and the data will be on the x-axis. If you put the data on diagram, always your exposure will be on the x-axis and outcome will be on y-axis. So it's a standard. So these are the terminologies very important. I mean, in the exam, you'll be giving the scenario. You have to identify what are the exposure variables, what are the study variables, what are the outcome variables. This is very important. Okay, next, moving to this part. Of course, we will see up to here in our biostat all the sessions. Of course, some of the univariate analysis, not multivariate analysis. This is not in your syllabus. So we will see here the data presentation. How we can present the data in the form of tables. So frequency distributions, is the picture is worth of 1,000 words. Instead of talking, I mean, lengthy sentences about your data, just you put the data in a proper table form or the graph or chart, that will be more informative. There is no need to explain and elaborate. Just to give, I mean, whole information in the table format. So what the advantage, I mean, of putting frequency distributions? It gives the pattern of variability, it gives the center of the distribution, it gives the ranges, what is the minimum, what is the maximum, it gives the shape, how it is, whether it's a following normal distribution or skew. So we can put this frequency distribution in two forms, simple frequency and group frequency distribution. You all have studied in your first year, just reviewing, I mean, all these things. Because without this, I mean, we can't move further. So simple frequency distribution, the number of times that score occurs. So I can ask you how many of you got, I mean, 25? This 311 is out of 25?
Yes.
Yeah. Out of 25, how many got 20? How many of you got 20? No one? Okay, only one. How many got, I mean, 15? 15 out of 25. I don't know, what's the denominator, 25? What
yes.
is marks they put
25.
There?
25. 25, yes.
Why are you not responding? No one got 15?
We didn't see the result. We didn't see the result.
They most of you are there. I saw some of the faces there.
They give you proof.
That's why I'm asking. Anyhow, someone saying, I mean, 20, this is the frequency. So 20 got, I mean, how many 15 got? How many, that what I mean, I'm going to, what I'm putting here. So make a table with the highest score or the other way around, lowest score. So the total number, I mean, will be your class strength, that's your frequency, the total number. So this is the simple example. Due to space problem, I can't take, I mean, bigger data set. So this, you can consider that, I mean, how many boys in each of the family. So there are 25 families. There are 3 families where there are 9 boys, mates. There are 2 families, there are 8. Like this, I mean, the data. So what I'm doing here, this is the raw data. I'm arranging, I mean, either increasing order, decreasing order. Anyway, this is the frequencies. So what is the advantage? Instead of looking, I mean, the bigger data set, I mean, we can look the frequency, where the maximum number is, where the minimum number is, where the concentration is. So we can get, I mean, quickly, by looking the table, we can get the information. Yes? That's what, these are the raw data, I mean, number of persons, number of males in 25 families. So the first 5 indicates there are 5 boys in one family. So there are 7 boys in another family. So what I am doing? So 9 occurring 3 times. So this is the frequency. 8 occurring 2 times. This is the frequency. So what is the maximum frequency here?
5 and 4.
5 and 4. Okay, of course 3 are there. Maximum is here, I mean, the 5 children and 4 children, I mean, this day, I mean, there's an overlap. I mean, they have more than, I mean, 2 modes. Okay, what do you mean by relative frequency? What do you mean by relative?
Comparison.
Taking from the total frequency, how many of these, I mean, belongs to each category? That's what I mean, you call, I mean, the proportion. Or we can say relative frequency. It's a proportion, I mean, to the total N, that is the total sample size. So divide the frequency by frequency of each score, I mean, by total N. So this is what relative frequency is equal to, your frequency divided by your sample size. Then if you are doing, I mean, manual calculations, it must add total to 100% or the probability 1. If it's not, then you have some problem, I mean, in your arithmetic. So this is the same example. So how I got this? 3 divided by 25.12. 2 divided by 25.08. If you multiply this with 100, what will it become?
12.
12%, 8%, 8%, then the total will be 100%. What do you mean by cumulative frequency? What do you mean by cumulative? The word cumulative.
Congregation.
Cumulative effect. We say that, I mean, there's a cumulative effect.
Identity effect.
So you are adding, I mean, successive values. Okay, the preceding values in the data. So you can see that cumulative frequency is the number of scores at or below a particular score. So a score standing relative to the other scores. So what you have to do? Count, I mean, lower scores and add the simple frequencies for all the scores below that score. So the same example, forget about this. Take the frequency, you keep the first number here. So 3 plus 2, 5. 5 plus 2, 7, 7 plus 1, 8, 8 plus 4, like this it goes, the total must be 25, which is same here. So if you are doing, I mean, simple arithmetic,
what's the significant
data, we do in the exam, suppose if you are doing, I mean, any calculations, you check, I mean, this total frequency must be here. Otherwise, you are doing, I mean, some simple additions wrong. Yes.
What's the significant?
You know.
Yes, yeah.
What's the significant of doing this mathematical?
Yes, exactly. That's my next question. What is the significant? Can someone answer this? What is the utility? What is the advantage of doing this exercise? Why should I do this?
To group and categorize.
To categorize. Okay. What else? What information you can get, I mean, quickly by looking the cumulative frequency column?
To know the percentage of the frequency in the...
Know the?
To the percentage of the frequency in the first intervals, for example.
Suppose if I ask, I mean, how many families are there, I mean, with less than 4 and less than 4 children? How many families are there, that is boys, sorry. How many families are there out of 25? 5 and more boys.
Okay.
So instead of looking, I mean, here raw data, counting, or looking this, you can get, I mean, this information here. So 4 and less, how many families? 4 and less. So 16. So there is no need to count. You can look the cumulative frequency. You can ask, I mean, any question here. You can look, I mean, that column. You can get the total number. So this is the advantage. Either it took, I mean, higher value or lower value or in between, anything. Whatever the question asks, I mean, how many families are there with the 6 and less? And 6 and more? 7 and less? 7 and more? So this information you can get instead of, I mean, counting here, instead of looking, I mean, this.
Can you just repeat the relative frequency?
Relative frequency is so simple. You divide this 3 divided by 25. This one. If you multiply this with 100, it will become 12%, 8%, 8%, then you add up, I mean, this will be 100. Okay, this is simple frequency distribution, what we have seen. And the terminology is relative frequency and cumulative frequency. How to make a group frequency distribution? If you have a data, of course, again, here again, this small data set. Consider these, this is the example, I mean, for 30 patients and the hemoglobin values, how to make a group frequency distribution. So take again example of your class. How many got less than 80? Sorry, greater than 80? 70 to 80? Okay, 60 to 70? So instead of taking all individual values, I'm categorizing into 4 or 5 groups. So this is what you call, I mean, group frequency. Instead of putting, I mean, all your highest marks, say one of you got 95, 95 got, I mean, 2 students, 85 got 3 students, like that, I mean, big list, which is ungrouped, taking, I mean, lot of space. So what I can do, I can group them. I can group into 4 or 5 categories. So that's what, I mean, I'm going to do with this example here. So for that, you have to take, I mean, some basic requirements. You have to look, I mean, what is the minimum value, what is the maximum value in any data set. Calculate the difference. Decide the number and width of classes. That is, how many groups, I mean, I want to have. There is no mathematical formula to have this much, I mean, numbers. You have to look the size of the data. You have to look, I mean, the difference. Then you decide. The rule of thumb is not to have more than 10 class intervals groups, not to have less than 5. What will happen if I make your marks of this group into 2 categories? Say greater than 70, less than 70. It's no meaning. What will happen if I make the whole class 15 groups? Say greater than 90, 90 to 85, 85 to 80, like that. Again, you are, how many of you? 180 number will be scattered. Will be scattered, I mean, over 15 groups. Again, it is not giving proper meaning. So what you have to do, it should not be less than 5, it should not be more than 10. Between 5 and 10. So again, the width, how much the width? Shall I take, I mean, 90 to 100, 80 to 90, or 90 to 95, again, 90, then it will have problem. So again, the width and number of class intervals has to depend upon, I mean, the size of the data and the basic difference between minimum and maximum. So for this example, what I have done, I have put, I mean, the 7 class intervals, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And see here, the interval is not that much big.
0.9.
Because you have only 30 samples. So that's what I mean, 9 to 9.9, 10 to 10.9, like this it goes. The only point what you should remember is, this should not overlap. So 9.9 here, then it starts, I mean, the next value. So it must be mutually exclusive. Otherwise, when you are doing, of course, the computers will do for you. But the point what you should remember is, when you are looking, I mean, it should be not be overlapping. So once you prepare this, then you look at the data where the each of the values falling in any of these intervals, you put tandem marks, then you convert, I mean, into frequency, get the frequency distribution table. Okay? So, not necessary to have only one characteristics. You can put, I mean, 2 characteristics. You can compare male and female in the same table. You can compare, I mean, the age distribution. Okay, here, then you put, I mean, the outcome, what you're looking, and then you have the group frequency distribution. What we should remember is, when you are looking, I mean, for your data analysis, when you're preparing the tables, I mean, for your results, all tables must have, I mean, the number, and it must have the title, so that the reader can understand what the data it is, what you're talking about. You must have the column headings, and if you have any extra information, you must have the footnotes. So in the title, you must represent, I mean, what the data it is, where it has been collected, how it has been classified, all these information must be there. What, how classified, where and when. Then you must have the variable names. If you are calculating the percentages, you can put the percentages. And in the footnotes, you can have the additional information. If you have any extra information, apart from the title, you can put them in at the bottom of the table. Okay, the next part, how to put your data in the form of diagrams and graphs. Again, this is classified based on your type of the data. So that's why I stress them in a lot to understand properly the different types of variables. It's very important. Very important to decide, the diagrams, to decide the statistical test what you are using. This will be the continuing process. So qualitative data, either it's a nominal, ordinal, you can put, bar chart. Which of these things you heard before, which of these things didn't heard before? You already studied little bit statistics. Which of these you come across, heard about this or used, which you didn't know about this?
The stem and leaf, somehow, and the box and whisker.
What?
These are new.
Okay, what about bar chart, histogram, frequency polygon, frequency curve, comfortable?
Yeah.
You know that. Okay.
Are you sure?
Personally, I don't know about the other.
Okay, no problem. They were tested, they were tougher words. Because the exam finished, got good marks, leave that. Not to retain anything here. Okay? So the same thing, I will discuss each of these things in related to the type of the data. That's important. So this example talks about the age of around 70 patients. I am not sure how many they are. So you have the minimum here 11 and maximum is 79. And these are the ages of the patients. So what type of data it is?
Quantitative.
Continuous. Maybe continuous. Of course, you are not having full in years number. We can put on a continuous scale. It is a quantitative continuous. So what diagram we can put? We can put the histogram. So on x-axis you have the age, on y-axis you have the frequency, and these are the class intervals, the lower limits of the class intervals. What observation we can make from this?
Most of the
which is the maximum age group, maximum frequency here?
31.
So this is the center. So this is the longest rectangle here, which indicates the maximum frequency, which is the minimum frequency?
71.
Here, this age group. What you can observe here is these rectangles are connected to each other because it's a continuous data, quantitative, and we are making as a continuous. This is the continuous scale. So that's why there are no gaps here. So it is connected to each other. So this is a typical histogram. Mm-hmm. So the next graph is, it's a similar. What you have to do, you attach the center point of each rectangle from this point, this point, this point, this, 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 like this. Uh-huh. If you attach that with a scale, we call as a frequency polygon. If you attach these points with a smooth hand, we call as frequency curve. Mm-hmm. So there is no big deal, there is no big difference between that two. Frequency polygon and frequency curve is same. If you attach the points with a scale, which is like this, this is a frequency polygon. If you draw with hand, we won't get exactly like this. The smooth curve will come. So that is a frequency curve. Mm-hmm. So histogram, frequency polygon, frequency curve will give the same information, but in a different shape. By looking, by seeing the eyes, it looks different, but the same information from statistical point of view. Cumulative frequency polygon, you can also draw by taking the cumulative frequencies. Okay, so it's starting, the cumulative data starting from here, not from zero. That's why this mark. So it goes, in the form of S shape. It will increasing, by the end. So this is what, it going, each point. So the same example, next I'm going to show you the diagram of stem and leaf. Here, there is no brackets here. This is a mistake. Just you can discard this. There is no meaning attached to this. Okay, can anyone explain? Okay, what is the meaning of stem and leaf? What is stem? What is leaf?
The stem is the intended digit and the leaf is the
branches.
Units?
Yes. Units, okay. No, I'm asking the meaning of stem and leaf. If you take any plant or tree, which part we call stem, which part we call leaf.
Stem, the core.
Stem will be the hard part, which is in the center. And the leaf will be?
The arborization.
I mean spread across, I mean around. Now here, which is stem, which is leaf? In this data, in this diagram, which is stem, which is leaf here?
Stem is for example number 6 and the leaf is 1, 2. Okay.
Are you sure?
Yeah, the tennis digit is the stem and the unit digit is the leaf.
Here I'm asking you,
yeah,
which
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 is the stem and on the chart is the leaf.
Okay, how to read that? You are correct. How to read that?
For number 6, 11, 1, 11, 3, 12, and 16, and 19.
So you're adding or you're attaching?
No, I'm attaching.
Attaching?
Yes.
Okay, everyone followed what he said?
No.
No. Did you follow? Who said yes here? Someone said yes. What he said is correct. So the first column here is the frequency. 6, 19, 11, 13, 5, 4, which is the total is 16. This is the total number of patients. And the next column you are seeing here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. These are the units. What the unit means?
It means that from 10, 6 people, the frequency of 6 goes from 10 to 20.
All of you are, what's your, all of you in ages? You are all you?
21.
19 to... Don't say this is, I mean, all of you are in what units?
21.
Number.
In 20s, early 20s. If someone asks someone age, they won't tell their age. You know that? Particularly females. They won't tell their age. So there is a saying, females should not tell their age. And males, they won't tell their monthly income.
Okay.
How much they are earning. So these two are top secrets. Because if you reveal your monthly income, you will be considered, I mean, you are very high profile, I mean, high earned income person. Yes. Suppose if you tell moderate, no, this guy is not, I mean, that much. If you tell low, then, so people won't tell, I mean, their incomes. Same thing, female won't tell her age. You know the reason, sir. I don't want to go into the details. So, if someone asks, I mean, someone's age, particularly females, they say early 20s. What that mean? They are around 21, 22, 23. Mid 20s. What that mean? 25, 26, 27. So, you have to guess. Or late 20s. What that mean? Around 28, 29. So these are the three categories. Instead of telling specific number, they will say early, middle, and late. So you are all in early 20s. I am in the middle 40s. So these are the units. 10s, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. This is what we have put here. So 10s. So there are 6 patients whose age is, as our friend said, 11, 12, 12, 16, 19. So there are 19 patients whose ages are 21, 22, 22, 23, like this, I mean it goes. So go to the last, there are 2 patients whose ages are 74, 79. Again, coming back to your question, previously you asked, why should we do this? What is the advantage of putting this diagram over histogram? Same data, histogram we have put, frequency polygon we have put, frequency curve we have put. What is the advantage of this?
Accurate calculation of how many people have the age.
Gives you the real number.
The real data, whole data is here. Whereas in the histogram, in the frequency polygon, frequency curve, there is no whole data. There is no raw data. Here you can see whole raw data here. And you can see the shape. Just you turn your neck, you turn, I mean, look this picture like this. It looks like histogram. It's a histogram. See, these are the rectangles. So it's giving the shape, it's giving the maximum frequency, it's giving the minimum frequency, it is giving the range, and it is giving the whole data set. So this is the advantage, I mean, of having a stem and leaf over histogram, over frequency polygon, over frequency curve. Is it clear, all of you? Stem and leaf?
So, doctor, where's the...
Yes, sir, no. Yeah, someone asked some question. Yes.
So, I know the information. I can obtain whatever I want. But what is the stem and where is the leaf?
You're coming back. What is stem here? You tell. What is stem here?
1, 2, 3, 4.
This is the stem. Your friend told already. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. This is the stem.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the leaf.
Uh-huh.
This is the stem, and this is the leaf.
So the stem, five people have a common 10 years age.
Yes, yes. So for example, what is this one? There are five patients whose age is 50, 51, 51, 52, 57.
So 50 is the stem.
Tens means, what is the value? Tens means starting from?
10 to 19.
10 to 19.
Mm-hmm.
20s means 20 to 29. 30s means 30 to 39. So we are putting the units. Box and whisker plot. Why it's called box and whisker? Because in the center you have the box and you have the edges. Look the next slide. So this is a box and whisker plot where you can have the descriptive statistics. Five statistics we can get. What are that? Minimum, maximum, lower quartile, upper quartile, and this is the median. We will see these terminologies later, next week coming session. So what I'm saying here is, by putting this plot for a quantitative data, you can get the summary statistics and you can get the shape also. How much, it is scattered, whether it is a close or not, all this information you can get. This is the another, development, putting the diagrams, for any data set. You can see here, the utility of this, suppose if you have data on traffic accidents over a period of, 1 week, you put, from Sunday to Saturday, you can put, for each day, what is the minimum number of accidents, this. So you can put, one graph, with the different shades and different colors. So you can put the same information in one picture by putting in this plot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, till now what we discuss is for quantitative data.
Except for the box and whisker, how do we find the box and whisker? We can't find the mean.
In the center, suppose if it is normal distribution, the median, mean, mode will be the same.
How do we know it's a normal distribution?
We have to see, the shape here. Suppose if it is, the box is, suppose this side, it is not normal distribution. Suppose the box is lower side, it is not normal distribution. If it is a box in the center, exactly, leaving a equal space on the top, equal space on the down, then it is normal distribution.
But can we say the mean?
My question is. Yes, we can. If it is normal distribution, mean, median, mode or same. But here, we can get the median.
Median
only. If it is normal distribution, then all are same. Okay, till now we have seen the quantitative data, five diagrams. Histogram, 5 or 4. Histogram, frequency polygon, frequency curve, and stem and leaf. Box and whisker. Now what we are looking is for qualitative data. Qualitative data, pie chart, you can put. The example here talking about the prevalence of different degree of hypertension. So you categorize as mild, moderate, severe.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can put this, you can equal to 360 degrees. You know the circle, the area is 360 degrees. So whatever the corresponding proportion you have, the percentage, you can put that area with a different color or the different shape. So which gives the indication that this much area relates to this category, this much area relates to this category, like that. The next is bar chart or bar graph. This again for qualitative death. So this example here talking about the distribution of risk factor among cases with the cardiovascular disease. What are the risk factors? Smoking, alcohol consumption, level of cholesterol, diabetes, hypertension, lack of exercise, and family history. So what is the difference between the histogram and bar diagram here? What we can observe?
The bars is not...
So here, it's a separate.
Separate.
So it's not, I mean, attached to each other. Most of the students, I mean, do this mistake. If I give the diagram, I mean, the exam and put, I mean, the name, they'll put, I mean, for this, they'll put histogram. For histogram, they'll put bar. Because the shape looks like same. But if they're not able to identify, I mean, the basic difference, I mean, of here, discontinuity there, I mean, it's a continuity. So the continuous data, I mean, you have together, I mean, the rectangles, whereas here you have the gaps, I mean, in the bars. So you can put, I mean, multiple bar charts. So this example talks about the HIV cases enrollment in USA by gender, men and women, for each year. So there is no need to have, I mean, two bar charts. In same bar chart, I mean, we can put with a different color. So this gives the information that for this year, what is, I mean, the number of cases, I mean, of HIV for men and women. So what we call this is multiple. You can have, suppose, look age-wise. There is no need to not limit it only to two. You can put, I mean, three bars. Say less than 20, 20 to 40, greater than 40. It's a multiple. It's a more than one bar, what we call as multiple bar chart. Same information we can put, I mean, other form, stock bar chart. Instead of having multiple bars, you can put in one bar with the different colors indicating, I mean, up to here the number of cases for men and the remaining area for women. So this is another way of, I mean, presenting your data. What we call this is stock bar chart. Okay, putting together, this is for quantitative data, this is for quantitative data, this is for qualitative data. Most prominently, more frequently, what we use, I mean, these are the graphs. Stem and leaf, very rarely people use, because people, you can't follow it, I mean, immediately. It will create, I mean, little sort of, I mean, confusion, until unless someone knows that, I mean, they can follow. But bar diagram and the histogram and frequency polygon, frequency curves is more often we see in the literature. There is another graph. Again, I apologize, I mean, for the low visibility of this. This is taken from the textbook. Scatter diagram. If you take the data for one person on two characteristics, take the famous example, age and blood pressure. My age, my blood pressure. So his age, his blood pressure. Is there any relation between age and blood pressure?
Yes.
So your question is, as age is increasing, whether blood pressure is increasing
or decreasing,
or as age is increasing, blood pressure is decreasing. So you can put any hypothetical statement. So you can look from the scatter diagram what's happening to one variable as one variable is increasing. So this is what this example, you can see the second example here. The scatter plot showing the relationship between FEV values and age. You know what you mean by FEV? Or finish the physiology. What is FEV?
Forced expiratory. Forced expiratory.
Yeah. What happens to that values as age increasing?
Decrease.
So this is natural. So we can see without doing any calculations, by to put the picture, we can see what is the pattern. Now you see here, as age of the children is increasing, there is a trend. There is a trend, I mean, FEV values are increasing. If it is a perfect, I mean, correlation, it must go like this. But there is a trend, it is increasing. So like that we can look, weight and height. Okay, what happened, I mean, to weight as height increasing? You can take, what values you can take? Weight gain during pregnancy and the weight of a newborn baby. So as weight gain during pregnancy is higher, the weight of a newborn baby will be higher. So you can see the relation. Not doing any calculations, we can put up a picture, I mean, you can look, I mean, any other examples like this. So this is what we call scatter diagram. Remember scatter diagram, the relationship between two quantitative variables. What these variables are? Age is quantitative, FEV is again is a quantitative. The examples, what I told, what are the data? Weight and height, two quantitative variables. Age and blood pressure, two quantitative variables. Weight gain during pregnancy and outcome of a newborn baby. Again, two quantitative variables. So, scatter diagram is meant for the relationship between two quantitative variables. Is it clear? So, one person, two values. Not, I mean, my age and his blood pressure. Not his age, another blood pressure. It won't give any meaning. So one person, one individual, you take two values and look the relationship. You can't take, I mean, for one person, you have to take a group. For any study, you have to take a group of patients, then you take, I mean, two values, then you look the relation. Okay, for all the graphs, you must remember, there are some rules for designing graphs. Okay, let me ask you. All of you finished the literature review for your research? Literature review.
Finished? Yes.
Yes.
Started now.
Yes. Started already. Yes.
Okay. You come across, I mean, in the articles, the tables, the diagrams. For table, where will be the title?
Below. Above.
Above. For graph or below. Chart, below. Why? Below. Why? What's the reason? Why they didn't put top for the graph or like table?
Because
the table.
Because
the table have the variables
on the top.
Uh-huh.
So in the graph, have the variables at the top.
So,
bottom.
And that's
the
top?
No, at the bottom.
So when you are reading the table, a reader will see from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. As he said, he's having information in the data. Whereas for the graph or the chart, the x-axis, I mean, will be down there, so the reader will read C from bottom to top. That's why the title will be the top. So this is the point, I mean, you should observe. So the always, I mean, for the table, the title will be the top. For the graph and chart, I mean, the title will be top. So these are some of the rules, I mean, you have to maintain. A graph should have a self-explanatory legend, that is the title, so that a reader can understand what it's talking about. A graph should help the reader to understand the data. Axis must be labeled. For example, age in years, weight in kilos, height in centimeters. So you have to put, I mean, these scales, the measurements. Units of measurements have been indicated. Scales are important. If your data is not starting from zero, you have to put the break on the x-axis or y-axis. That's what I have shown you in the one of the slides. Mm-hmm. The cumulative frequency, it's not starting from zero, I'm putting, I mean, the break, I mean, slash. Because your axis starts from zero. When your data is not having, I mean, start not starting from zero, it's starting from somewhere, I mean, 20. So you have to put, I mean, some sort of indication that to show that your data is not starting, I mean, from the minimum values. The last point, avoid graphs with the three-dimensional impressions or, I mean, giving a lot of special effects, because nowadays you have the softwares. People will take, I mean, different diagrams, I'm putting, I mean, different dimensions, I mean, 3D, something like that. It will create confusion, I mean, to the reader. You may not able to convey what the information you want to put, I mean, in the diagram. If you do, I mean, lot of, I mean, special effects. So try to avoid that. Okay, so we'll stop here. If you have any doubts, the previous session, particularly about the type of the data, because it's a very important, I mean, concept. It will be repeating for your coming exam and final exam also. If you want to clarify, if you want to know anything, I mean, we spent still 5 minutes to clarify that. All of you clear, I mean, the type of the data? Different variables with examples. If I do any scenario, any clinical scenario, you have to identify by reading that scenario what type of data it is.